You are listening to Grandpa Lampshade.
And welcome back once again. Glad you could join us this week. I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to see that you're here to the Church of the Lampshade Show, the one and only, and of course, your only host. No ghost host here. That's right. There's only one host. Yours truly, the ever humble Grandpa Lampshade. Always looking to have a fun discussion, insightful topics. That's what we do here as we get together. And of course, we will have a Christian-specific message later on the show, kind of the highlight of the show, at least in my opinion, and apparently in the opinion of many of y'all as well. So it's a fun ride here. If you're new, if this is your first time tuning in, I think you'll enjoy it. We got a lot of repeat visits, if you would, the congregation getting together. So I'm convinced if you listen once, you'll probably want to listen again. We do, this is the 84th installment, believe it or not. Time is flying by, more so the older you get. Believe you me. And we always like to start off recognizing those who aren't shy. They pay those tithes. That information's at the bottom of the page. You want to be a part of that. We got snail mail. We got Bitcoin. If you have some other kind of cryptocurrency, drop me an email. I'll do my best to get you an address for that. I do have people that do that from time to time. I have no pride. I'll take your Zcash. That's right. I just do what I can. We got 6 supporters this week. We always like to get started off with listener supporter mailbag. So without any further ado, let's go through that. And, because a lot of times that's easy topic material as well. So we just kind of get the show rolling with this. First up's from Brian on the subject of being nice. A word God spoke to my heart was that nice is like a satanic inversion of the biblical fruit of kindness. Nice is petty lies, perhaps well meant, but lies, whereas kindness is hard truths told in love. I think we can both imagine which one of those fits better in the modern church. Brian, and by the way, before we get off into that, Brian, if you get a chance, drop me an email, because the money order you got signed on the back and not the front, I don't think they'll take that, so I'm probably going to need to send that back to you. Anyway, I like this, because there's so much inversion of words from the Bible and the words from the scripture. For instance, you think of, where the scripture mentions like the meek, or, the humble shall inherit the earth, the meek shall inherit the earth. And people translate that to mean weak, but that's not what it says. It says as meek, which would be like the opposite of overly proud. I'll give you some idea. You look at these wealthy people, super rich people, these billionaires. And I mean, they're the opposite of being meek. And they think the world is in their hands, but they shall receive nothing in the end. I saw a story the other day. I didn't read it, but I saw a headline the other day about some billionaire trying to give away all his money to charity foundations. Wish he would have gave it to me. I would have appreciated it. But, really, if I was rich like that and I wanted to give all my money away, I would like find people, individual people that really just, could use something that would really change their lives, and I would give it to them. Instead, they give it to some foundation or some charitable organization that just like sucks that up, and it just disappears. But anyway, they said this guy wanted, his dream was to quote unquote die broke. And he was working on fulfilling that dream. And I thought, what a fool, because we all die broke. You take absolutely none of it with you. Everybody dies broke. You look at these people who are obsessed with money, who are obsessed with power. You can think of the names. They're in the news all the time. People are talking about them all of the time. Money and power. Bill Gates and is trying to cram his vaccine down our throats. And they believe their money and their power is everything. It is their God. It's not a stretch to say it is their God. And yet they're not going to take any of that with them. They will die broke. We are all guaranteed to die broke. Congratulations, we're all going to die broke. Those who left behind may get some of that money for a while. But as everything else in this life, it is in the temporal realm, which means it is temporary. We are in time. So anything we accumulate or gain or whatever in time, it's all temporary. And it's important to remember that for bad things, too. because those two are temporary. The good times and times of happiness, we should enjoy them. We should be capable of enjoying them, but these are temporary, and so are the bad times. Poverty and wealth alike are also temporary. These two will come to pass. They will be gone. And in the end, we all go in the box, from kings to the homeless. Everybody leaves this world. Everybody leaves this world broke. We all die broke. I just thought that was the strangest thing. My goal is to die broke. It's like, don't worry, that's going to happen. What the hell do you think? You know, I mean, you're going to like have a bank account in eternity? No, that's just. But no, you're right. I mean, it's like love, you know, the love has been twisted from the biblical sense to just being this unrecognizable thing. And I do. I think nice is this. What does it even mean? And it just means running around, putting up a front in a lot of cases and not saying the truth and staying away from the truth and not ever being controversial or saying anything that, you know, might offend anybody. Luckily, here at the Church of Lampshade, we don't have that problem. We offend people all the time. We even offend our regular audience from time to time. But you know, it makes the show stronger because folks come back. I mean, you know, it's all good here. We're all in fellowship. Let's get here. What do we got next? Jackie, coming to you from on the road this week. Been visiting Red State and Red State areas. The tourists are really easy to spot. They're the only ones. They're the only ones wearing masks. It's nice to see out here in these areas all the Trump flags all over. And on Labor Day there was a big street rally, and it was awesome. Almost 2 hours of cars driving through, honking, tons of flags, etc. And you know, it really is. I was talking with somebody IRL the other day, and because people out here are kind of the inverse of this. People out here in the red areas, as it were, I mean, they don't grasp how the people that say in Washington, D.C., in Yankee land, I mean, they live in a bubble. And for those people, you know, Washington, D.C. and New York City is the center of the universe. And they don't care. They don't know anything about the rest of the country. They don't care about the rest of the country. They don't want to know about the rest of the country. We're stupid rubes because we live. If we weren't stupid rubes, we would live in Washington, D.C. or New York City. We would be super smart like them and live in those places. We wouldn't live out here in flyover country. They have no knowledge of nor inclination to know what is actually what the rest of the country is even about, because they hate us. And that's not an over-exaggeration to say. I mean, just turn on TV, watch it. Well, you can't watch it for very long because it'll make you sick. But look at it as like a Stephen Colbert. These people hate you. They look down on you. They think you're stupid. They think you're ignorant. If you weren't stupid and ignorant, you'd want to live in New York City like them. They think you're, you know, they think if you don't have the right kind of college degree at the right kind of college, then you're just, you're stupid. You're like way beneath them. The arrogance of these snarky people who are actually incapable of, you know, actually doing anything, you know, creating anything, repairing, fixing, whatever, anything. You know, it's just breathtaking. They think because they have a degree and a whole bunch of snark, they're better than you. And yet they're fixing to find out. I really believe as this thing comes apart, they're going to find out that, you know, the guy that's capable of repairing things, fixing, figuring out how things work and actually accomplishing anything is going to be a whole lot better position than the guy who's just got a smart ass remark to say and acts arrogant and haughty. Living in a bubble is a dangerous thing, no matter what the situation. Living in a bubble is always a dangerous thing, because especially when you consider the people, so many of the people that live in these bubbles of New York City, Washington, D.C., they exert a lot of influence over government policy. And because they have no clue or any inclination to even learn about how the rest of the country is, they are pushing agendas, I think, that are really stupid. For instance, you know, if just per se as a hypothetical, say the election happens around and Trump wins and they attempt to force him out of office because they think, well, we can just mob the White House, force Trump out of office, and the rest of the country will swallow that. And I can tell you out here in Red Stateville, that ain't going to happen. I mean, it's just not. They have no inclination about how much the rest of the country is just really, really fed up. And if you get that snowball rolling, Rolling. You might not like where it goes. Mr. TGPL, thank you again for what you do. Keep the truth alive. We all keep the truth alive here at the congregation. We are all a part of this. I very much appreciate it, but you are all very much a part of that. And I hope that never comes across as sounding like I'm just kissing y'all's ass, because I don't do that. Every one of you is just as big a part of this as myself. How you live your lives, how you interact with the people around you, how you attempt to get up every day and do the right thing. And even though you screw it up, you get up after you screw that up, then you get back on the right path and keep chugging forward. That is what life is about. That is what God demands of us. You're going to screw up. That doesn't negate all the times you were not screwing up, but you were going to screw up. And when you do, you get back up and you keep chugging along. And you never give up. It's referred to in the scriptures, running the race. It's a marathon. This is how it works. You're going to stumble. You're going to trip. You're going to fall. You have days when you just, man, you catch your second wind and you're on a roll. And you're going to have days when you're like, what the hell am I even doing? And you can't even figure out what you're supposed to be doing. That is all normal. Don't get discouraged by these things. This is the way we're all going. And finally, I'm just going to say this is from H for purposes of anonymity. Grandpa Lampshade, just want to say God works in mysterious ways. I literally dreamt about listening to your episode of 825-20. Let's see here. Oh, yeah. And that was about 15 months ago. I only know about the show because of one of my older brothers recommended you to me. Take you what you will from that. I am using this as a personal proof of God's work. Thus, it's a big motivator for me. God bless from H, and thank you very much. And, it says in the end times that, you're going to see things. People are having dreams. You're going to, this is a unique time. It really is. And it's easy to say, people have always thought they lived in biblical end times, and the end times being a long drawn out thing. And we've discussed that briefly before on the show. Instead of thinking the end times being like condensed in like a week or two, which is kind of the way people think. I think sometimes they think, well, is it the end days? Well, let me check here the calendar. When would that have started? Last week? This year? And I've always maintained the end times began after Christ ascended to heaven, after the resurrection. The end times began, but the end days, if you would, and we're kind of getting late in the stretch of that, and we're seeing these strange things, this clown world tier of destruction. And as we are in these latter days, I don't think it's unreasonable that people start having dreams and start seeing things, and people's faith starts moving, because it's being concentrated in a remnant of believers, because so much of what calls itself Christianity is just, it's just nothing more than another label for everybody else in the world. So I don't think that notion is a strange thing. Anyway, officially wrapping up the listener support mailbag, I thank you all once again. Very much appreciated. And again, if you want to be a part of that, information's at the bottom of the page. These are indeed strange days. They really are. They finally admitted Ruth Bader Ginsburg is dead. I don't know. Maybe she's been in a refrigerator for the last 6 months. I wouldn't be surprised. Things are so absurd anymore. I was going to say that nothing would surprise me, but I don't want to tempt fate here. Every time I think, well, we've reached peak absurdity, I wake up the next day and the next day happens and I see something more absurd and more clownish. But yes, big news circulating around as I record the show is that Ruth Bader Ginsburg, they finally admitted she's dead. Don't know how long she's actually been dead, but David finally admitted she's dead. So now there'll be a big shindig. They'll try to whip everybody up over who's going to nominate the next Supreme Court justice. I did the show, several shows back. I don't feel like flipping through the notes, see which one. But, I coined the phrase foundermentalist. I'm a foundermentalist. Let's truly get back to what the founding fathers wanted. Truly get back to it. I talked about how many people would actually, who claim they want to do that, would recoil when you start naming what those things mean. But when you look at how things were originally set up, Supreme Court was just almost supposed to be an irrelevant branch of the government. It really was. It was just sort of like, well, if it just so happens that a disagreement on a law, or maybe a law is unconstitutional, know, we have to have somebody come in and arbitrate that on those rare occasions. The Supreme Court can do that. And now, and we've progressed, regressed, if you would, to the point where they're basically like, you get these horribly written laws come out of Congress or whatever, and now and then signed into law or whatever. And then, you know, the ultimate arbitrators of this is the Supreme Court. I mean, once they get something on ink and paper, and even if they don't have anything on ink and paper, they just make it up. They sit there, well, we found a constitutional right here. Believe it or not, you know, I fill in the blank. I mean, the government can punish you by taxing you to force you to buy a product from a private company. It's amazing. I was fairly familiar. I'm not a constitutional scholar, but I've been through the thing a time or two, and I'm pretty sure I don't see anything in there. You have a right to desecrate people's religion. You have a right to shit all over the culture of the country because freedom of speech. But, you know, you don't have freedom of speech if tech companies want to shut you up and silence you. You don't have freedom of speech when it comes to that. They are the ultimate arbitrators of the law. It's just like little mini kings, little mini dictators, and they're not of the they're not of the utmost top quality. And these decisions, these cases get sent up to them. And it's like everybody kind of knows how they're going to come out, but they'll sit there and shuffle it and always make it look like a close decision. Okay, which quote-unquote conservative justice is going to flip this time? You know, this is never like the quote-unquote liberal justices. Other words, the commie justices. It's never them that flip and go the other direction, because everything always seems to progress or regress, if you would, in the direction of communism. And it's always some quote-unquote conservative justice. Which one's going to be the one that flips this week? Clarence Thomas is about the only one that doesn't flip. Kudos to him. Credit where credit is due. Clarence Thomas is about the only one that doesn't flip. But all the rest of them, one of them is going to be the flipper. And it's a close one, but it went towards communism again for the umpteenth time. Big surprise, which conservative justice that was so important to get on the court, which one flipped this time? They rotate them out. They try to rotate them out so it's not so obvious the game that's being played. But the commie justices never flip. It never like, wow, this surprising Supreme Court decision actually went with something constitutional. It was this liberal justice that flipped the court. This structure never seems to work that way. It's always an inevitable trajectory towards the communist agenda. But anyway, yeah, so old Ruthie, they finally admitted she's dead. It's interesting timing with all of this talk about a possible contested election. It's openly being talked about. We haven't even had the election yet. And they're openly talking about the ramifications of a contested election. Team D knows they're not going to win. Not on an up and up election. So they're already prepping everybody to be mentally prepared for the contested election. I was around, for those of you who are around, remember the whole hanging Chad fiasco with Al Gore down in Florida. It was just like a warm up for what we're getting this time. This is going to be some shit show. And I think it's interesting that now that they've gone ahead and rolled Ruth out of the refrigerator and admitted she's dead. So now you've got, and they're not going to put another justice on the court before the election. That's not going to happen. They're not going to put another justice on the court by November. So now you're going to have a court that can be evenly split and won't actually be able to come to a decision. Could make for an interesting outcome. I'm not being all conspiratorial here, but I don't think it's without due cause to consider, you know, where they're going with this, you know, where this could be going in the sense of, in the context of their plans to contest the election. If the Supreme Court, because during the hanging Chad fiasco, finally the Supreme Court was the one that shut it down. The courts came in and said, yeah, no, you can't just keep doing recounts until you get the result you want forever. There is a time deadline for this. So you haven't got it done yet. It's over. Sorry, Al. You didn't win the election, but don't worry. You've warned us that by 2012, we're all going to be dead from the global warming. So really, in the big scheme of things, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I think we need to watch that, because now you have a court that could be evenly split, and now you take the court out of there. You take the court out of the equation here. If they just split even, then what? Then where does that go? Speaking of the global warming, it's interesting they've cycled climate change. You notice that? It's so amazing because you watch the media, and you could tell they're going off of polling data to see what'll help Team D, or really should be Team C, Team Commie. But you could tell because they were pushing the commie riots. They were pushing this whole thing. And then all of a sudden, like a light switch, it's out of the road. You know, and they've been rotating it in and out regularly anyway. But I think this is a little bit different because all of a sudden they got their real polling data back and it showed that, you know, commie mobs, violent commie mobs in the street isn't polling well. You know, even with their attempts to say that Biden supporters, Biden voter, Team D voters burning the bitch down as somehow Trump's fault. That wasn't working. And so their polling data showed this was really hurting them. And now all of a sudden, just like that, it's out of the news cycle. It's out of the news cycle. Now it's all cavoted. Now they'll be able to go on about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. The Crypt Keeper is finally... is welcome to Tales from the Supreme Court. She's finally dead. So they'll have that to go on about, but they've completely taken it out of the narrative. But they've cycled in climate change now. You know, it's like they were looking around going, well, we have hurricanes and there's wildfires out west. They've arrested several people for setting them that look a whole lot like they'd be a part of Antifa, but we've been reassured they're not. Very trustworthy. But how can we blame the orange man for this? Let's bring climate change out. Let's bring the climate change out. Blame the orange man for the climate change. He's the reason there's fires out west. It's all so absurd. It's all so stupid. But apparently a lot of the people are stupid. So I guess they figure maybe it'll work. Because I mean, as an issue, nobody gives a shit about climate change. I mean, the only people, I say nobody. Nobody cares about climate change except people that are already going to vote for Team D. I mean, that's it. There's the only people that care about that. Their base is going to care about that. Their base is going to get whipped up. Yes, we got to save the planet because it could burn up by 2012. Al Gore warned us in a movie, in a book. Those people are going to get those people are going to get excited about it. But they're already voting Team D, Team Commie. So I don't think any of the rest of the country is going to really be swayed by that. I don't see anybody that's leaning Trump waking up one day and turning on the narrative to be told there's wildfires, because the orange man is bad and is a science denier and climate change. I don't think anybody's going to wake up and do that and go, well, I was leaning toward Trump's, but piss on that. He's destroying the planet. I'm going with the Harris administration. I'm going with the senile guy. I don't think that's going to happen. Climate change is one of the biggest, dumbest hoaxes that they've just kept alive for so long. I mean, most people don't realize how old this hoax is. When I was a little kid, way back in the day, in the 70s, I was like in the second or third grade, and we used to get I've told this story before. When you get old, you repeat stories. But I was a little kid, like in the second or third grade, and we used to get the Weekly Reader. I don't know if that's still a thing. Probably not. But we used to get the Weekly Reader. It's this little shitty newspaper they gave out to the kids. It's mostly propaganda. And we would read articles about things such as, by 1979, the whole country is going to be on the metric system, and because your parents are stupid, you need to learn it, because they're not going to understand it, and you're going to be the one teaching them the metric system, because we are inevitably going to the metric system. It's chiseled in stone. It's gonna happen. Last time I checked, my speedometer is still in miles per hour. Nonetheless, one of the other things that would be in the Weekly Reader, I remember reading about it, is global cooling and how we were headed for another ice age because we were evil for having cars and, you know, being able to feed ourselves and actually being able to enjoy a little prosperity. Sorry, your prosperity is no good. You're destroying the planet. And you're going to cause another ice age. Some guy wrote a book. If anything says science, it's somebody writing a book. This guy wrote a book, and we were all going to have another ice age and freeze to death. And once again, those dire predictions did not come true. I think that was supposed to happen by the 80s. It didn't happen. Then in the 90s, they cycled out global warming, and we went the other direction. We're burning the planet up. And then finally they had to admit the earth was in a cooling cycle again. So then they said, piss on it, we're just going climate change. That we don't have to keep switching back and forth. This hoax is old. This is an old ass hoax. This hoax is the only hoax older than this is that 6 million were turned into lampshades and their bodies vaporized in wood fired ovens. This is a really old hoax, but they keep it alive. They keep it alive because the media keeps it alive. You know, they keep this hoax going. I mean, it's like you look at a relatively new hoax, like the Kravota virus. And I mean, Most people by now know it's bullshit, except for the true believers, and they're not going to change their mind at all because the data, the evidence. You would think that I said this the other day. I posted this up. Nobody saw it because I'm in the social media internment camp known as Gab. But I posted this up the other day. You would think that true believers in the COVID virus at this point would look around and be like, where are the dead people? Where, I mean, if this is such a deadly thing, I mean, there should be empty houses up and down my street from all of the dead people. I should be seeing ambulances. I just see like meat wagons going down the road, all the mobile morgues piled to the ceiling with corpses from this horrible, deadly virus. I said this before, you know, when it first broke out, it's understandable. We didn't know. I didn't know. When this first came about, I'm like, well, maybe it is this big, deadly thing. We don't know. We have the information they give us. We have to figure it out. We're like 8+ months into this thing. If you haven't figured out it's bullshit yet, there's something wrong with you. But the media just keeps on like it's real. I mean, they just pretend, they sit there, you know, we're isolating ourselves. We're in the middle of a pandemic. And I'm thinking the rest of it, once again, that's that bubble thing. That is the bubble thing. In New York City, Washington, D.C., it's real. They're promoting this as real, and everybody wants to go along with it being real, whether they believe it or not. So they assume the rest of the country is buying into this shit. It's totally real. You know, I mean, really, how do you have a thinking brain and not know it's bullshit by now? Because it's obviously bullshit. But the media just keeps going along like it's real, just as they do with the climate change. The hoax is real because they say it's real. One of the things that's frustrating when it comes to like Trump is apparently, I don't know, he trolls the media, but at the same time, he gives them ammunition, you know? He treats them as legit. They're just the propaganda wing, you know, for the commies. Why doesn't he just set up his own thing and just talk directly to the people? Oh, well, you know, I don't know. I guess because he would be relying on Twitter and Facebook, it would just ban him or just censor everything he says. It's utterly absurd. The media is the communist way. Did y'all see any of that? I didn't watch them, but I did see clips of these town hall meetings. And first, Trump had a town hall meeting. And of course, it was arranged, I'm sure, by the media. And they put like this handful of people because, you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic. So there was like five people there. And all of the questions were hostile questions. You know, Mr. President, thank you for taking my question. How do you plan to answer for the mistakes you've made that have led to 6 quadrillion people dying of the doom flu? Yeah, and then Biden has one, and here's the questions he gets. You know, it's essentially like, you know, so Vice President Biden, how evil do you think the orange man is because of his ineptitude by handling this never seen before pandemic that's killing all of these people? Well, thank you very much for that. It's absurd. And yep, Trump participates in this shit. He needs to. Who is on his? Yeah, I guess Kushner's got to be running this aspect of his reelection campaign because this shit is so stupid. Hey, look, our opponents have set up an obvious trap to make us look stupid. Let's walk into it. Why not? Because, you know, it's the media. We got to play along with the media. Why do you have to play along? I mean, the vast majority of the people, I think, have figured out the media is just the propaganda wing of the communists. I think if you just ignored them and went on, it would actually tear them down. Only thing propping them up, only reason anybody watches is because you go in front of them and say stuff. So people watch it to see what you're saying. It's the only reason they have any ratings at all. I mean, they just do the full commie talking points 24/7. There is no even pretense of not being biased on this thing. Why do you give them legitimacy by talking to them? Just do like everybody else has figured out, Mr. President, and just tell them, yeah, I don't talk to you. I don't talk to the media. Piss off. They're not on your side. They're just going to take what you say and try to frame it in a way to make you look bad. Quit giving them quotes. But he is a boomer. You know, he's a boomer. And I'm not even saying that in a derogatory manner. I just mean that being older, he, you know, he's stuck in the way things were. And I think a part of it, I think it gets to be a real temptation the older you get. When you look at these problems, you tend to think of them because younger people look at problems. Look at these problems and they think, well, things haven't worked. We need to tear it down and build something new. Whether it's right-wing young people or left-wing young people, they look at these things. Okay, well, we're in a mess now. We need to build something new. But the older you get, the more you tend to think in regressive terms. Well, things used to not be like this. We need to find a way to get back Like, you're going to reel it back. You're somehow going to reel the media back to where they're not openly communist, where they at least put up a pretense of being not openly communist, of being unbiased, even though they've gone full commie. And it's a big mistake that people, as they get older, tend to make. They think that they can undo what's happened and go back in time somehow and make things like they used to be, which is, of course, completely unrealistic. I was telling somebody the other day, I said, look, whether Trump gets reelected or not, I mean, you're not going to stop the downward spiral. I mean, you're not. I mean, this trajectory we are on is not going to stop. Now, what we're basically doing is, as we are in free fall in this collapsing society, we're trying to kind of steer to where, you know, the most sane people as possible will survive at the end of this thing to start the rebuilding. I always, as I say time and time again, you know, the car's already gone over the cliff. We're just waiting to see who crawls out of the wreckage at the bottom. Well, you know, we're trying to kind of steer it a little bit. Maybe we'll, you know, land over here in that soft dirt over here rather than over here on these rocks, which would be, you know, a Harris administration. But make no mistake, you're not going to stop the downward spiral of this thing. The trajectory is set. We can try to steer it one way or another, but this thing is done. And I don't say that necessarily with yay, hey, I'm not being like that, but I absolutely don't see any way this thing becomes non-done. What, the communists going to wake up tomorrow and decide to quit being communists and trying to destroy the country? Are we going to like reelect Trump and next year at this time, they'll nationalize the banks, renounce everybody's debts, reset the currency and let things get rolling again? Is that realistic? Does anybody listening to this show think that's realistic? It's not. I'm not going to do that. I really do believe the financial aspect of this is one of the reasons we're seeing this huge push to grab power, because right now, under the current state of things and the way things have been over the past years, is their power is exerted through money, is exerted through finance. Whether you're talking about banks or corporations, we use the general term the oligarchy. Their power is for money. They buy the politicians. They get the policies they want. It's all money. This is where their power comes from. But when the dollar collapses, when it goes into hyperdeflation, hyperinflation, that power is going to be negated. So they're trying to exchange right now while they can. They're trying to exchange the money power for raw power. They're looking at how this is inevitable, that the financial aspect of it's going to crash. So the day of being able to just pay off the politicians to suppress you will be over. And they'll go with option two, which is to literally have somebody with a gun march you to the ditch. Without necessarily being over the top with that statement, this is where, come on, we know the history of communism. It always winds up with marching people to the ditch. I mean, that's what, you know, they do it time and time again. You look at the history of communism, and this is what it always, there's always at some point in time, they have to force it on you with a gun. And, you know, right now they can do it with money, but when that whole thing comes apart, and it's inevitable that it's going to come apart, so what do they do then? How do they retain that power? Well, they're trying to exchange right now. They're trying to actually grab raw, you know, just raw, brutal power to where they could literally force you under the threat of death to do what they want. They don't have to buy off anybody because that's going to get harder to do as this whole thing comes unraveled. Now, you maybe hear me say this and think, that sounds absurd, GPL. That sounds absurd. If I told you that, I mean, but you're being conditioned for it. You're being conditioned for it right now. You know, if I told you next year at this time, under threat of being shot by the military or the police, you will be ordered to lock yourself in your home, house arrest yourself. Everybody has to be, it's an emergency. You have to lock yourselves in your home. You know, a couple of years ago, if I'd have told people that, they'd have said, well, you're utterly insane. But you look around and people are already conditioned to that because we're in a pandemic. People being conditioned for it, you being conditioned under the guise of this so-called pandemic. People are conditioned with the idea. They've accepted the idea, the very notion, the premise that the government can tell you can't leave your house. That's false. That's arrest without cause. And people have accepted it. Arrest doesn't have to equal they put you in a jail. If they tell you, because they have enough jail to put everybody in there. So if they tell everybody, lock yourselves in your house and don't come out till we tell you, you are imprisoned without a warrant, without charges being filed. But you just walked into the cell voluntarily. You're being conditioned for it. You come out and say, for whatever reason, do we need all of you to lock yourselves in your home? Everybody's conditioned. They'll march right in there wearing their masks because you're told to do so. This is all conditioning. You're getting everybody to where they're of that state of mind. They don't question these things. You have governors ruling by dictate. There's no laws being passed. Here in Texas, the bars are shut down. Bars cannot reopen. No bars can be open. Why? Because the governor says so. The governor has no legal authority to do this, but nobody's questioned it. People have complained about it, but nobody's questioned it. They're conditioning everybody. Well, the central figure, there's no law in the book that says he can do this, but obviously he can because nobody's challenging him on it. So when they come out and say you have to lock yourself in the home, nobody's going to say, well, who the hell gave you that authority? They're just conditioned for it. And of course, not everybody's going to. You listen to this show, you're going to be like, well, I ain't doing that shit. But that's fine. But there's not enough. They're looking, just like I was talking earlier about, they looked at their polling data and the commie mobs isn't playing well. So now they're going to talk about it. They're going to try to erase it from existence by not talking about it. You know, they're looking at the data all the time. I guarantee you they're looking at the data and they're looking to see how many people, what percentage of the population buys into this shit. What percentage of the population wears the masks? What percent of the population is open and will be malleable when they're told to lock themselves under house arrest without questioning it, without challenging it, without trying? You look at Australia, what's happening? This is like a beta experiment. In Australia, they're doing the hard lockdown. They got police on the street stopping people, arresting people for being out of their homes and not wearing their masks. This isn't just about the doom flu. It's about conditioning people. Let's see how well this works. Will it work on a larger scale? It's about control. It's about raw, brutal control. And there's nobody in authority, including Trump, who has the ability or the will or whatever you want to say to use raw, brutal force to counteract that. I mean, it's the reality. So that's where we are. We're just trying to steer the landing somewhere better. You know, because to make this simple, because people, you sit there and say, you know, because Trump means more than just Trump. You know, I've got my own problems with Trump. I've had, you know, I'm critical. I'm a truth seeker. I'm not, you know, it's like vehicles. You know, people that are like vehicle brand loyal and how they just wear you out, you know, like say a Chevy guy or a Dodge, whatever the case. You got a guy that says he's a Chevy guy and he is a Chevy guy. And it doesn't matter how big a piece of shit his Chevrolet is. He's going to tell you how it's so much better than everything else. There's yes, I have to work on this thing every day, but it's a lot easier to work on than your piece of shit. You know, people like that. I'm not brand loyal. I'm a truth seeker. Yeah, and so it doesn't matter. You know, I can sit here, you know, when Trump does stupid stuff, I'm going to point out his stupid stuff. You know, I don't have to sit here and just, my guy is never wrong. Yeah, Trump is useful. Trump represents things more than what he's actually going to do. At this point, Trump represents the sane part of the country. You know, sit there. I know you get cringy with normies and normie conservatives that haven't grasped the gravity of the situation. We all know that feel. But you have to understand, Trump represents regular, normal working people. Team D over here hates regular working people. Back in the day, the communists pretended they were doing a workers' revolution. The communists on the street today hate the workers. If you're working for a living, you must be stupid. Otherwise, you'd be smart like them and just going to college on mom and daddy's money and getting a social studies degree or some other shit. You're stupid. Yeah, they hate the workers now. Trump represents normal America that doesn't like any of this stuff. Yeah, Trump represents it because there's nobody else. And it does have meaning. If the communists hate him and they, as a part of their strategy, are trying everything they can to thwart him, then it just makes common sense because we can't know everything that's going on. But it makes common sense. You could take the information that, well, obviously your enemies don't want him to get reelected. So if we're countering our enemies, what should we do? This isn't hard to figure out. It's not that we really think Trump's going to suddenly save the country and turn it all around and we're going to go back and it's going to be the whatever 19, whatever the hell you think is a dream decade again. And it's not realistic. But if you're trying to figure out how to counter your enemies, well, look at what they're doing and try to stop that. They're trying to run Trump out of office no matter what. Okay, well, a good counter strategy would be to try to thwart them at that. They obviously don't want you doing that, so go do that. Trump represents the rest of the country, the same people. And yes, they may not understand the depth of the corruption yet. They may still be, in fact, they're very likely still living in the world of, if Trump gets reelected, the country's going to get sane again and all this nonsense will stop. We're somehow going to roll the clock back. But it's important in the sense that he does represent these people, because eventually these people, when they do accept that there's no stopping the trajectory and we've got to figure something else out, those are the people that are probably going, you know, they're going to be on your side. Those are people that can be on your side as this whole thing collapses. They may not be on your side now, but they have that potential. They represent the rest of the country, not New York City, not Washington, D.C. So it is important in that aspect. I'm not a Trump cheerleader. I'm not sitting here going, oh, well, Trump's going to save America, make America great again. It's not realistic. But the communists hate him. That's enough reason there. That's enough reason there. And we can look at a Harris administration and know that's crashing the car on the rocks. I'd much rather crash the car over here in this plowed field. It's probably a higher rate of survival there than if we just plummet headfirst into the rocks. We're still crashing. No, nobody's sitting there saying, well, we get somebody else behind the wheel. You know, we're not going to crash. Physics is what it is, and the trajectory we are on is what it is. And we're crashing, but let's try not to land on the jagged rocks. Let's try to land over here in this plowed field where we have a better chance. As we wrap this up, because we got to get into the Christian-specific message, but as we wrap this up, I really think looking at a split court now, and they're obvious, they're openly talking about, there's no conspiracy theory to it. Team D is openly talking about contesting the election to the bitter end and refusing to concede. So, you know, looking at how this plays out, I think, once again, one of their big flaws, and they have a lot of flaws, they're not that smart. You think they are because they wield power, but they're not that smart. It's funny, by the way, not to toot my own horn, but you know, we did the show about the fatal flaw in their strategy. And lo and behold, like the next week, like I think it was the week that the show aired, these stories start coming about how Biden's campaign's alarmed because they're polling so poorly in the brown community, in the Latino community. And they're running around now all of a sudden trying to shore that up. It's like they must be listening to this show. But a fatal flaw, if they're going the direction that looks like they're going, of contesting this to the end and maybe even trying to essentially force Trump out and pull a coup. If that is the direction they're going to go, and it's a little early to say that, but you know, reading the tea leaves from where we're at right now, it kind of looks like that's part of the strategy, is to force him out of office. Big flaw in that is their inability, their bubble that they live in, where they don't grasp how the rest of the country is going to react to that. They think the stupid rubes will go along with anything. And I think that is, I think that's very much a very flawed outlook. I don't think that's how that will play out. I don't think there's a way they could paint that as legitimate to the point to where the people out here that they loathe in flyover country would just swallow it, would just go along with it. I really think they're making a big, big mistake if that's the direction they're going in. And I do think things are pointing in that direction. Like I said, we got to wrap that part of the show up. I got to check my coffee here, get resituated. And you know what to do. Get in here and fill those pews. It's time for a Christian-specific message. The sermon this week, Reverend Lampshade, getting all ready. We're going to lay it down. No modern cuck churchery here. It is called the Church of the Lampshade for a reason. And if you're new here, you won't get a sermon like you're going to get anywhere in any church in your town. You walk into any random church in your town, I guarantee you, you're not going to get anything like what you get here. So get in here, fill those pews. Let's get this week's message rolling. So as you get settled in here, we're going to talk a little bit. I guess we'll talk a little bit this week about women and men. And the state of such, it's not a new topic. It's not something unfamiliar. If you staying up with the state of our collapsing society, how bad things are, you know, and we all often will look and at these things, and a hot topic a lot of times is the sorry state of women in this clown world and this collapsing society. And it is true. I mean, as a whole, it is true. But I thought we'd talk about this a little in depth of why it is, because you know, non-believers listen to this show and we get into this sort of things here. And a lot of times I think they think that, you know, well, how is any of this relevant to, you know, what we see going on around? How is this religion stuff? How is this God stuff? How is it relevant to what we see going around? And it's the center of it, believe it or not. It all makes sense when you factor it in. All of these things, the randomness comes out of it, and it all makes sense. One of the things I find amazing is you will have non-believers, and if you're non-believer, listen to this, I'm not ragging on y'all, I'm really not, but you'll have non-believers say, I don't buy any of this God stuff, I refuse to believe it, whatever. But they will acknowledge that the natural order exists. And if you understand the natural order is it's like a set of laws that just govern nature itself, which is who instilled those? Man didn't. Man didn't establish the natural order. If the natural order exists, somebody established it. It had to be established. It didn't just happen at random. I mean, somebody established the natural order. I think the natural order of things, one of the easiest things perhaps to illustrate and understand the existence of God. If you look around and understand the natural order is a force, it is an external force. It's not something that man exerts. It is a natural force. And when man fights against the natural order, things get reset against his will. I mean, he can push against it for a while, but inevitably things get pushed back to the natural order of things. It is like, I always liken it to like an automated program that keeps things on the earth more or less running smoothly as they should be. Might get a virus once in a while, but ultimately it corrects itself and everything gets reset. If you can understand the natural order, it just makes sense that this comes from somewhere. Somebody wrote the program. If you saw a program on your computer, you wouldn't be like, well, this program just popped up on my computer out of nowhere. Somebody wrote the program. Somebody wrote the program. Somebody installed it on the computer. You look at the natural order and it makes sense. It's like a unwritten set of laws that everybody can understand if you're not living in the city and you actually live among nature, but you just look at humans and how the world works and how things, you know, there is a certain order that things are supposed to work in. And every time man pushes against that historically, and as you can see now in modern clown world, the more things get out of kilter until they rock back on center. It's like if you, when you're a kid, if you're old like me, when you're a kid, they had these toys called the Weebles. You remember the Weebles? They weeble and they wobble, but they don't fall down. They were like this little egg shape. They were like these little egg-shaped figures, you know, and they were just painted up to look like people that didn't have no arms or nothing. They were like these egg-shaped things, and they had like sand in the bottom of them. You know, well, you could tip them over, but they would always stand up. You could tip them over and hold them over. When you took your finger off, they stood back up. They weebled and they wobbled. I don't know why that was supposed to be fun. They didn't have legs. You had to just hop them. You know, how's that human life? You just hop them around. You know, you had the Weeble farm. Weeble farm and put them in the Weeble house. And then they look like little, you know, put them in the Weeble bed. And the Weeble bed was like a little egg crate because they wouldn't stay laying down. So you just set them in there. They're sleeping standing up. I don't know. It's one of those really stupid toys. But the point is, nature is like the Weebles. You can push it over for a while, but inevitably you're going to have to move your hand. And when you do, it goes back up. That's how the natural order works. And it just makes sense that somebody established that. It didn't just come into being out of nothingness. If you really consider these things, I think it maybe that's one of the easier ways to understand God. So we have the natural order of things, and this applies, of course, is very well illustrated in the relationship between men and women. And we look at women, it's easy to focus on women in clown world because they're utter, you know, as a group, I'm not insulting the female listeners of the show at all, but as a group of women here in America and the West in general, pretty much trash. And there he goes offending people again. But they are, I mean, as a group, It's horrible. It's just utterly horrible. Again, I'm not offending the female listeners here. But bear with me on this, because I think it's important to look at how it all ties together, because this is a rebellion against natural order, and it is a rebellion against what God has established. Because as long as it's important to understand that, because as long as people remain in rebellion, things aren't going to reverse. They're not going to change. You're just going to keep, things are just going to keep getting worse until they get so bad that your finger slips off the Weeble and it stands back up, until nature pushes it back, and it will eventually push it back. You can push against nature so far, and nature will just let things get shittier and shittier and shittier. And then all of a sudden it collapses and everything goes back to the reset. It's man's stubbornness that is making things get so bad. If people would just return to what God established. God does not establish these rules because he doesn't want you to have fun. That's the lie that the devil likes to tell you. God just makes a bunch of rules. He's like a parent. You know, God, your parents just make these rules up because they don't want you to enjoy life. No, they're telling you that if you hang out with a bunch of assholes doing drugs, they're probably going to get you on drugs, and you're going to wind up in trouble and your life's going to go to shit. It's not that they don't want you to have fun. It's to keep you from destroying your life. They don't want you to not be able to play with the ball. They're telling you don't play with the ball in the freaking street because you're going to get hit. And hit and killed, you know, and, you know, it's not that they don't want you to play ball. You just can't play ball in the street. God doesn't establish these things because he doesn't want you to enjoy life. So, and again, that's another lie that the devil tells you. And it's a lie that society has bought into, hook, line, and sinker. If I follow this God stuff, I won't have any fun. And you look at these people having all of this fun. They look pretty miserable to me. They got screwed up lives. They're unhappy. They're drinking themselves to oblivion. Well, if they were enjoying life, they wouldn't need to get drunk to enjoy it. Where's all this pleasure that the devil promised? Because people look pretty freaking miserable to me. And they just keep plowing deeper into sin, plowing deeper into rebellion. They're going to be happy. The devil keeps telling them it's going to make you happy. If you shove your hand in the meat grinder further, it's going to feel good. It hurts pretty bad right now, but I'm not going to believe otherwise because I'd be admitting that I'm wrong. I'd have to let go of my pride and my arrogance and admit that this is a screw up. Need to change direction. Okay, we're going to go ahead and get our scripture reading out. I think we're going to start with 1 Corinthians 11. We'll do verses 8 through 9. For the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man. Neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. This will be fit in as we move over here to Ephesians. Let's get over here to Ephesians. I'm trying to find all my bookmarks here. I'm too lazy to reach over and hit the pause button. Sorry. I just have to wing it. Filling time. It's a filler episode. No, let's do Ephesians chapter 5. Let's do 22 through around verse 30. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. I'll stop there for just a minute. As the church, you look at this illustration, as the church, as wives submit to their husbands, therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let wives be to their own husbands in everything. Now, how can we expect wives to submit to their husbands when the husbands, as a part of the church, are not submitting to Christ? The church is in full-blown rebellion. The church is chased after what passes itself off as the church. It's chased after the things of rebellion. And yet people sit here and go, how come women are just trash because they're not submitting to their husbands? They're not finding a husband and submitting him and finding happiness. But where are the husbands? They're in full rebellion against Christ. These things all work together. It's an illustration. It's one of the reasons God gives you marriage is so you understand the relationship between God and the church. And it's all kind of spelled out for you right here. The man, you know, the woman's made for the man, and as we read before, it's all interrelated. You can't look at it in isolated terms. Let's keep rocking here. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle, or any such thing, but it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. So, the husband views the wife as basically like a part of himself. This is the instruction. And once again, as illustrated, the church, you know, the members of the church are part of a larger body, a part of the body of Christ himself. And you spell these things out, and people will sit here and say, yep, that's right. But when it comes down to the actual doing, you know, I can't imagine, and I've seen it where, you know, people will get married, and before they ever get married, you know, the traditional vows get tossed out. That's a very trendy thing. The traditional vows get tossed out. And they usually get tossed out because the bride-to-be says, I don't want that submit part in there. I ain't submitting to nobody. So you're automatically now you're taking your wedding to a woman who's already very open about her rebellion. And it's not about rebellion against you, because it's about rebellion against God. See, when a woman says, I'm getting married, I'm going to have my princess day, and we're going to spend all of this money, and I will be the center of attention. The groom is just basically a prop. They could put a mannequin up there. And it's like the female version of a sex doll. He's just the prop for her princess day. So many of the weddings are like this. And you go to a wedding, and a woman says openly before the wedding, I'm not going to do that vow about submitting, because I'm not submitting. But she's not. It's not even about submitting to the husband. She's in open rebellion about not submitting to Christ, submitting to what Christ has established, submitting to the natural order. If you ever find yourself in that position, guys, run away. I don't care how special you have, how much you just love her. It's mostly lust. You'll get over it. Run the other way, because she's already, you're not going to fix that. You're not going to fix that with your manly leadership. She's in open rebellion. I'm not submitting. She's telling you up front, I'm not submitting. Don't pay them. Don't write the check for the wedding ceremony. Go the other way. Let her go be in rebellion elsewhere. You're not going to fix her. You're just asking for a whole lot of trouble. It's so amazing how this anti-God feminism and these things of the world are all have one thing in common. They're all about rebellion against God. And again, it's easy to sit here and throw rocks at women, but men are in rebellion against the church. Men are in rebellion against the very body of Christ, against the words of Christ. So you have all parties in total rebellion. Then we wonder why we have chaos. Again, God established these things for reasons. It wasn't because he didn't want you to enjoy life. He didn't want you to be like a prude and somebody that doesn't have any fun. Establish these things to keep you from going down a path of destruction. And everybody's bought into the lie of the devil. This is where the fun is. When does the fun start? We've got a whole society living in open rebellion against God. When's the fun start? Because right now I'm looking around and society looks like anything but fun. Everybody hates each other. Everybody's in disarray. Everybody's miserable. Marriages are collapsing. Society is collapsing. Women have just become total sluts that run around just being absolute skanks. Their lives are a wreck. Men are running around like they're still stuck being a teenager or some shit and can't get their act together. Everybody's in rebellion against what God has established, because the devil says it's going to be fun. Fun hadn't started yet, but if I shove my hand in the meat grinder a little further, it's going to start feeling good, maybe. No, you're just not going to have an arm left. God establishes these things to keep you off a path of destruction. As a society, we've barreled down the path of destruction. And now we're reaping it. And we just keep pushing the weeble down harder. Yeah, at some point, the weeble's going to flip back up. It will get reset. You can't keep this going on forever. And people will sit here and they'll bitch and moan about the state of society. And you say, okay, well, let's do this. Oh, how are you living your life? Whoa. Don't expect change out of me. I want somebody to come in and wave a magic wand and fix all of this mess. But you can't do that. There's nobody that's going to do that. You have control over yourself. Are you living a godly life? Are you submitting to your husband? Men, are you submitting to God, to Christ? As members of the church, as a part of the body of Christ, as a part of the fellowship of believers, are you submitting to God? Oh, don't ask me to do that. That wouldn't make any difference anyway. And the fun will start any minute. You having fun? If you're living in complete rebellion right now, are you enjoying life? As I look at these people that are living in complete rebellion, they look pretty freaking miserable to me. They don't seem like they're having a lot of fun. They won't admit that they're wrong. They've bought into the lie that if they submit and start following the natural order that God has established, that if they start doing that, they're going to hate their lives. It doesn't matter that they hate their lives now. Somehow it's going to be worse. You'd think they would just try it. Be like, well, maybe I'll just try it. Just take a six-month trial error, a trial period, rather. Take a six-month trial period. I'm going to live in the most godly way possible and see if my life sucks. Maybe the devil lied to me. They won't. They won't even consider the possibility. Isn't that amazing? It tells you how fallen this world is. The devil can go to the church, to members of the church, and say, hey, why don't you just try the sin stuff? You know, you can always come back. And poof, off they go. But people barreling down the sin path, you can sit there, hey, why don't you try a free trial of Christ? Just follow these simple rules of living within the natural order of what God has established. See how your life works. Maybe it'll be better. No way. I'm not going to admit that I'm wrong. And things just keep getting worse. And people wonder why everything's coming apart. This is why these things matter. I mean, well, they matter in the big scheme of things because you want to be as close to God as you can when you enter eternity. You want to go to his kingdom. You don't want to be in the middle of rebellion. You can't be serving him and rebelling against him at the same time. You got to be on the right path. And the right path is laid out here pretty clearly in the scriptures. The natural order, God gave us the natural order. Line it all up and go down that path. There's like milestones, like markers. Okay, I got to make a decision here. Well, yeah, this is probably the right direction. Everybody's running around, lost in the woods. Lost in the woods, like a chicken with their head cut off. I don't know, running into trees. Hey, maybe you should use this map here and you can figure out where you're going. That won't be any fun. Take off running. Running around, lost. Wondering why they ain't getting anywhere. Go into a modern church and go into any church, any random church. Talk to the people. Do you believe in the word of God? Do you believe in Christ as your Lord? And say, yes, I believe in Jesus. He is love, loves everybody. Do you believe in what God has established? Yes, I believe in the word of God. And get up there and do a sermon and say, you bitches need to quit acting like a bunch of skanks and in rebellion to God. And woo, watch the footage. That preacher is going to be fired that week, even if it's the truth. Amen. Maybe you need to start submitting yourselves to what Christ has established instead of just doing your own thing and acting like somebody that's stuck in eternal teenagerdom. Your life might be a little better. Ho, 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 easy there. All of these things, when you're in rebellion to God, this is what you get. It's established. We've got a historical record. Go to the Old Testament, historical record. When you do this shit, the results are not exactly a surprise. And yet we keep doing it as people, as societies, as nations. We keep doing this rebellion thing. We're laid out. We got a historical record. You got warnings. You got guidance. You got a roadmap. If you follow this map, you'll find the path. It might be hard to find sometimes. You might get lost sometimes, but you just keep following, looking for these markers and trying to stay in the lines, and you'll get there. You'll get there. But if you refuse to even consider the map and you just run around in the woods, you're running around like a madman, naked, just running around naked like a crazy person, running into trees and then getting caught up in a bunch of thorns and bushes and wondering why you don't get anywhere. This interrelation between men and women is something I want to bear down on. Because we look at you look at the bad state, the poor state of women in our society, and it's bad. I'm not sugarcoating nothing for none of y'all. But, and it is bad. But as men, we've also got to acknowledge, and I'm not saying it's our fault. I'm not one of those like white knights that women cannot be, you know, women are just these angels on a pedestal. And if there's something wrong with them, it's our fault. I'm not saying that, but we have to understand, again, you only have control over yourself. So if you're a man and you look around and you say, man, women are shit in this country. Well, that may be correct, but you can't change that. You can change your own self. I always think of, you go back to the Garden of Eden, and the devil knew who to go to first, didn't he? He went to the woman. She's easily swayed. She's easily swayed, and she was the first to rebel. She went against what God said, and she committed the first sin. She ate the fruit, the symbolic fruit in the garden. And then she goes along and she tells Adam, hey, do this. This is awesome. And he's like, well, we really aren't supposed to. And she's like, you know, hey, let me flop these around or something. You know, and he's like, oh,
okay, I'll do it. I love her.
So Adam eats the symbolic fruit and he commits the sin. And then when God confronts him on, say, hey, you know, like they're fooling somebody, they're hiding from God in the garden. Hey, God, you don't notice what I'm doing here. And when God confronts Adam about it, because that's who God goes to first. You're the one supposed to be. You're the top deal. The woman come from you, not you from the woman. It's an interrelated thing, but you were the ones. God goes to Adam first. And what does Adam say? That woman. It's her fault. It's her fault. Yeah, I mean. Yeah, she was first one. She, you know, she's not off the hook. God didn't say, well, nothing can be Eve's fault. That's not what he said. But this notion that it's all her fault, she didn't shove the symbolic fruit down his throat. Men and women can complement one another and support each other going down the godly path, the path laid out by the Lord. And this is what a healthy relationship should look like. And it's very hard to find. Really, if you have one, and just thank God every day for it. If you have a healthy relationship where you keep each other, you know, kind of, you support each other going down a godly path, be grateful for it. That is a rare thing. It's rarer than most people realize. And I hate it when I see people that have that and act flippantly about it. Well, I don't know what's wrong with you. I've got a great wife and we do. You know, you're taking that too lightly. It's a very rare thing. Very, very few people have that. But that's the way it should work. Just as the members of the body of Christ in the church should all work together to support one another, the husband, men and women, you know, in an ideal relationship, you support one another and you head down the godly path, the path that God lays before you. But you have to understand, just as easily will men and women in a destructive relationship just keep dragging one another to the pits of hell. Like there's no escape. In a toxic relationship, even if you're trying to read the guideposts here and trying your best, when you got some woman or a man for that matter, when you've got a partner who's trying to loop you around the neck and continually drag you off into the woods, they're running off into the woods naked, screaming like a mad person, running into trees. And you're like, well, I'm married to him. So I got to go after him. I got to go run her down. Go chase after him. Get back, and you. Next thing you know, you're like them. You're running around the woods naked, running into trees, getting caught in briars, getting all cut up. Forgot all about following the roadmap because you're following her. A relationship can make it easier for you to walk down the godly path, or it can make it much more difficult. It can constantly lead you astray to where you, even though you have the best of intentions, you wind up running around naked in the woods. Because you're chasing after her and you're not chasing after God. You have responsibility. You have control over yourself. At the end of the day, that's what you have. People get tired of me. I know y'all get tired of me saying that, but this is a fundamental reality you have to accept in life. You have control over yourself, over your own life. You don't have control over everybody else. You control over yourself. You have control over the decisions you make and the directions you take in your life. Sometimes you get it right. Sometimes you get it wrong. But that's where your control lies. You will just drive yourself to frustration to no end when you try to have a mindset like you can fix the world, because you can't. You can fix your wife. You can't. You can live your life. You can do what you need to do. You can follow the guideposts the best you can. She has to make the choice to submit to you and to be a supporting role for you. As long as she's in rebellion and refuses to do that, there's nothing you can do to change that. And likewise for wives, if your husband's a real asshole and you're trying to walk a godly path and you're wanting him to take a leadership role in your home, you know, and live as a godly way, but he's a drunkard, a drug addict, and a real just general shithead, you're not going to change him. You're not. You have control over yourself. You don't have control over your partner. You don't have control over your spouse. You don't have control over your city, your town, your state, your government. You have control over yourself. If enough people control themselves in a godly manner, then yes, those big picture things change. But ultimately, you have control of yourself. That's why we focus on this so much here. Because this is one of the key aspects to changing the bigger picture. You start getting individual people to start figuring their shit out, getting their shit together. Start following the roadmap instead of running around the woods naked. If everybody would follow the roadmap, then enough people do it, then you start seeing a change in society as a whole. But as long as that society is in rebellion against God, make no mistake, it's not going to change. If you think you're going to elect a magic leader who's going to suddenly fix it while the society continues to be in rebellion against God, you are out of line with the natural order. It's not going to happen. The people have to choose to return to God. Now, sometimes a strong leader who demonstrates that, who demonstrates high morality and follows the roadmap that God has established, you know, this will motivate the people to do that. This is true. That's why you look in the records of the Old Testament, you would have a righteous king and he was, you know, acting and living and behaving in a righteous manner and the people would follow that. Where you'd have a wicked king and people didn't give a shit. They were like him. It was reflected, but ultimately the people themselves, individual people themselves, have to make that choice. They have to make that decision each day of how they're going to live their lives. Often picture like, you know, somebody tuning into the show for the first time. They're like, I hear there's like a sermon thing at the end. I wonder what that's like. And they're thinking, maybe it's something like, you know, woo, really. Yeah. And then they listen in. It's like, hey, ain't like no sermon I ever heard. I ain't never. Never heard nobody talk like this. There's a reason. We are different than what we do here is different than what you're going to get anywhere else. We got to wrap it up on that note, folks. Think about these things, how they're all interrelated. And remember, at the end of the day, you have control over yourself. That's where you need to focus. Don't waste your energy thinking you're somehow magically, by your own sheer willpower, going to change the world around you. If you focus on changing yourself, you will see things around you change. You will. It's just like a zone around you where things will start changing just because of your own outlook, because of the way you are changing yourself and how you're making a conscious effort to do the best you can. And again, like I say, if enough people do that, then you see the big picture start to change. But as long as the society, as long as the people remain in rebellion, they will remain in free fall. They're going to remain, just spiraling downward. So like I said, we got to wrap up on that note. A final thank you again. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. Information at the bottom of the page. It is very much appreciated. And we're going to wrap up on that note. Don't forget, you can catch us every Friday. Sit down with Sven Longshanks. We do a quick 30-minute clown world interview. We try to keep it light. Something so you can end your week on something you can possibly chuckle at. Some weeks it's easier than others, but it's always a fun time. So be sure and catch that. And be sure and catch us here next week for the Church of the Lampshade.